welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And I've been under the weather.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There was one article that I read some time ago. It was like a 20-page history of rope, which sounds boring, but turned out to be way more fascinating than I could ever believe. But I'm into that kind of thing. But yeah, no, you're quite rough right now.
Oh yes,
with the scratchy voice.
Yes,
and
it's the cigarettes I've been smoking for 20 years. Yeah, and I've mentioned this before that one of our listeners in Vancouver told me that I sounded 20-30 years older than I am.
Yeah, that's about
this right. Voice is not helping that situation.
How old do they think I am? Did they say?
I think they thought you were slightly older than me. No, they thought you were in your 30s, mid-30s, early 40s maybe. And they thought I was in my 40s.
Okay. Okay, so they think...
Possibly late 30s. Okay. I'm in my late
20s. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But anyways, yeah. I was... Not that I haven't let that go.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying. I'm going to get a letter from this guy at one point. They're going to Facebook me and be like, geez, let it go. But no, I can't let it go.
But yeah, no, it's a... Yeah. It's a windy, rainy day. Ottawa's being flooded.
Yeah, they called the army in. Did you hear about that?
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
They've called the army in a few places. Montreal had the army called in. About Montreal Island has been flooded.
Oh.
New Brunswick had the army called in, I think. Well, maybe not the army, but they called it in.
Montreal surprises me because they've taken care of that, whereas the part of Ottawa that floods basically every year is on a floodplain that engineers told the cities of Ottawa and Gatineau to not build on them because they're floodplains.
But you know what looks really nice on the waterfront? Waterfront properties. Yeah. Do you know, I think actually...
They could have made it into a duck preservation or something. You
know, Doug Ford has created... his plan for this is a perfect analogy of kicking a can down the road.
Uh-huh.
He's like, they shouldn't have to live where it's constantly flooding. I'm going to look about how we can make funding available so that you can build your houses slightly higher up.
Well, okay, so I'm originally from Hamilton, and my brother currently lives in Burlington, and both of those cities have recently passed what are called infill laws, and some cities have infill laws. Ottawa does not. An infill law is that you can't build on fresh land, so that's like forests, field, and farmland, until all the empty spaces in a city are filled in. And this neighborhood that we live in is filled with empty lots. Empty lots, not destitute, what are they called? Buildings that you can't go in because they're dangerous. What's that thing? What's that word? They're...
Destitute?
Not
derelict?
Derelict, that's it. Derelict houses. There's all over the place, and... In an infill law, you would just tear that down and replace it with something nicer. Or you have old, crummy buildings that you tear down and you replace with something nicer. And then, depending on how old and crummy they are, you might get tax breaks for doing so or something. Because you're, you know, revitalizing a neighborhood, you're building upwards, that kind of thing. Ottawa has none of that. And cities that do have these laws, like that's part of what made New York City so successful, is they would just replace things, replace things, replace things. Now they can't replace things anymore. Interestingly, if you look at the skyline of New York City, that tells you what used to be swamp and what didn't, because the tall buildings are on places where the buildings are anchored to the stone, the bedrock, and then all the low buildings, they're like in what used to be swamp. And every building in New York City is about as tall as it can be. So that's a fun fact for you. But yeah, no, there's no info. This is something that Ford could do as a responsible government, is press cities to have infill laws so that we stop building on our aerating farmland soil and we stop building on floodplains.
I mean, floodplains again. I don't think Doug Ford is really particularly forward-thinking. He does claim, and I feel like he's been reading Trump's tweets, that they would have something like the greatest, bestest, most awesome environmental plan of anyone ever in North America. I'm clearly paraphrasing. But it was like, really? You announced this like a day after scrapping the planting of 50 million trees?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just doesn't... Anyway.
There's also most Canadian cities take all of their garbage, stick it on a truck, and ship it to America. Which we've gotten in trouble with recently because the president of the Philippines said, if we find any more Canadian garbage on our shores, we're just going to put it on a boat
and send it back.
Send it back. And the way that that Canada as a country deals with our waste is embarrassing. Like, it is definitely something we're not doing well.
But you know what? That's really interesting. Obviously, we're recording here out of Ottawa.
Yeah.
And Ottawa declared a climate emergency. And a part of that is, first of all, the fact that it allowed them to call in the army. And unlike, I think, Gatineau, where they can seize property, I don't think Ottawa has that ability. As a result of this climate emergency, yeah, they actually have to look at all of their decisions as a corporate body through the lens of how will this impact the environment. So I think it's interesting that that will come up. But that isn't gay. And we are a gay talk show. And although obviously we are concerned with major flooding across the country. But,
well, you could also say environmental concerns are gay because environmental problems disproportionately affect low-income and impoverished persons. So, I mean, very indirectly.
Wow, how deconstructed of it. no, that's not what we're going with. I want to talk about this story, and we saw this story come up. And what are your opinions on this?
Which story? What are we talking about?
It's the Insta couple.
Oh my god!
Who had a breakup? Which so far you're like, okay, just for our listeners' sake, people who become
Instagram couples.
Yeah.
First, we should talk about what an Instagram couple is, because not everybody.
I was trying to say that.
Oh, okay.
When people who become relatively famous on Instagram, the image sharing website,
uh-huh,
you can follow us at queer.news, I think we are. I can't remember what our Instagram is, to be honest. We're one of those. You can or follow me at Velvet Studio. I think I have the old school account.
Ooh.
But if you get a certain amount, they sometimes... Instagramming is sort of really creating a public profile in terms of the ones that do it sort of semi-professionally.
Yeah.
It creates a public profile of what you want people to think that your life is like. And so this couple, by the name of Devin Gibby and Rob Zimmerman, met each other and they have kids, and they've decided... Gibby was divorced and has two kids. They decided that they were going to co-parent.
Okay.
So they created a Instagram about their co-parenting,
mm-hmm,
called Dads, Not Daddies. Of course, gay men of a certain age get referred to as daddies.
Mm.
So that's where the pun is. And it escalated from there. Their joint initiative has about 227,000 followers. So what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think Instagram is basically a platform that allows everyone to follow the dream of becoming Paris Hilton, which is that you're famous for being famous. And what is it that you do that got you famous? Being famous.
I had a photo.
It's really circular logic. I always like to fall back on that old expression. Not old expression. That old quote from... Everybody's free to wear sunscreen, which is one of my favorite spoken word pieces, which is, do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. And nobody really reads Vogue and stuff like that anymore. Not to the same degree that they used to in the 70s, 80s, 90s. But Instagram is now filling that space. Because
absolutely,
every gay man that I know who goes on Instagram every day, because I know you're on like two or three times a week, but you're not really into it.
No.
And you're mostly just following other people and seeing... Because yeah, there's a whole bunch of, like, not-for-profits and things
this
like that.
This is why I'm not very good at managing our Instagram.
Yeah, I know.
I paid somebody to do it because I'm like, I can't do that.
Everyone I know who's on Instagram every day has crushing self-esteem problems.
Mm.
And it's really just the modern beauty magazine, except instead of being 50% advertising, it's just gorgeous people top to bottom. Instagram couples are really, like, Instagram is, like, the porn of daily life in the sense that that's not what daily life looks like.
Yeah.
That's not how people actually live.
It's like all your photos are like the pictures of the food on the menu at the back of the board. It's like perfectly filtered. Yeah.
And you know, they say they Insta every single meal they eat, but they're not Instagramming bowls of chips or like toast.
Real Insta stars only Insta once or twice a day.
Yeah.
Otherwise you look
needy. Yeah, it's trying too hard, but it's the whole thing. I understand the appeal of Instagram. It's sort of like, you know, people make fun of MySpace because it's a bit dead, but MySpace is the best social media platform for embedding audio. So there are bands still follow up on MySpace.
Who is on MySpace?
Most of them have switched over to SoundCloud.
I think the only one left is Tom.
Tom York?
The guy on MySpace. No, because
Radiohead is... last time I saw their MySpace page was like 2 years ago. No, I'm talking about
Tom.
Tom from MySpace. Yeah, I know. Like, everybody's friend. But SoundCloud doesn't have as much space on there to actually advertise like upcoming events and put pictures and things like that, whereas MySpace was capable of doing all of that.
That was actually a glitch.
Oh, embedding music?
No, the whole thing. It was actually a software insecurity that allowed people to override the template.
Huh.
So that the template replacements and HTML embedding was actually a security glitch that when they realized people were doing so well, they're like, you know what, let's just leave it.
Well, I mean, yeah, because it's... Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So there's different things. Like if you're a visual artist, if you do something where like little... Because you can put like... little 10-second videos on Instagram, I think. So if you're doing some, if you're some kind of a visual artist, if you're advertising your skills as like a makeup artist or a set designer or an interior decorator or something like that, I think Instagram is the perfect platform for you. But every platform will inevitably be transformed into two things or whatever it's originally intended for plus two things. The first is vanity and the other is getting laid. Every single social media platform turns into vanity and getting laid eventually.
There's a great documentary on Netflix about Instagram, and it is astonishing the amount of young people who are targeted by predators through their Instagram.
Mm.
It's also astonishing the crippling effect that Instagram has on self-esteem, particularly of young people.
Yeah.
Well, what I like about this, I mean, they are like body perfect, like image, like they... sculpted like
they're Instagram perfect
exactly but what they would do is they would give parenting advice, and they actually did a lot of work on kind of normalizing LGBT parenting in I think it's Idaho, like Mormon hometown area, and they really built up an audience around that. But why we're talking about this is because they did a photo shoot for their breakup, which has them like looking off in different directions, and it's black and white, and it's a montage, and they don't look happy, but they don't look devastated. And it's, would you do a photo shoot if you broke up with somebody?
I wouldn't do I understand the utility of wedding photos. That's as far as I'm willing to go. Like it's, I'm not the kind of person to take pictures of absolutely everything, which is going to be frustrating because if ever I become famous for something, they're going to struggle to find pictures of me. Mm.
But at the same time, Instagram is a visual medium.
It is.
And like if let's say...
But having a staged photo shoot of your breakup is so bizarre. Vain and self-centered and crass. And there's just something so icky about it that I can't...
But it wasn't just their relationship. They were also a co-creating a product, which is the Dads Not Daddies. I think if we as a show had an Instagram that did things, and then we as a show ended,
dissolved,
I think being that it's a visual medium, there would need to be a visual image to represent that. I don't know if we would go full photo shoot, but I can understand that when you're in that medium and you're doing a creative product... that it sort of makes sense to also have a closure that reflects the medium. I've never heard of an Instagram breakup photo shoot before, but maybe
there's a first time for everything, even bad things.
Well, did you know that it was the International Day for Awareness Raising for Lesbians? I forget the name of the...
Wasn't it Lesbian Visibility Day? We just
Lesbian Visibility Day was just last week.
Okay.
And we didn't have a chance to chat about it last week on the show, but I wanted to talk about it. And as a result, all of our music this week is by the Lesbians.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we're going classic old school lesbian as well. So for all of our lesbian friends, oh, we should have done the Ellen Page by... Whatchamacallit?
I mean, there's a lot of... Well, actually, no. Now that I think about it, a lot of the famous lesbians that I was about to start listing were actually bisexual. So, like, Ani DiFranco and Sarah McLachlan. My brain just went empty. I think... Wasn't Nina Simone a lesbian? No, she was bisexual. Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah.
So we were going to play the Indigo Girls, but I think we might do an all-Canadian lineup. And the first song is actually going to be the Ellen Page by Partner. And I adore this song because we both know some lesbians and queer ladies who, at a period of time, all look spitting image copycats of Ellen Page.
Do you know why they look
or
like
Justin Bieber?
Well, that's what I was going to say, because they used to look like Justin Bieber, and then somebody made the comparison. They're like, oh, I better grow my hair out. And then they all look like Ellen Page.
Yeah. So this is the Ellen Page, not to be confused with Ellen DeGeneres.
Right.
Although a lot of lesbians look like Ellen DeGeneres. This is Ellen Page, the Canadian. And this is this group Partner talking about the Ellen Page, and we'll be back just after this. We come from the same place, but it's more than just a regional thing. Cause if it's 50% maritime, it's 50% lesbian. We're on the same page.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to
Can Queer. You know, I'm losing my voice and you're making me, I'm like, you do the intro and you're like, and then you forget who we are. How many years have we been doing this?
I was distracted by the ugly picture. Oh. So yeah, we're about to talk about that coin.
Yeah, there's a new coin out from the Canadian Mint celebrating the fact that Tutankhamun was a gay pharaoh. At least that's what I was told by Twitter, is that it is a visual representation of a gay pharaoh from ancient Egypt. What information do you have?
Well, not that. I mean, if anything else, Tutankhamun, he died when he was like 16 or something, didn't he?
I don't know. I was told
he and Edward VIII. I mean, or the sixth. Anyway, it's okay. So this coin is meant to commemorate 50 years of, decriminalization of homosexuality in Canada.
They've changed their tune.
Really?
Yeah. You go ahead and then I'll tell you.
Because it says equality, égalité on the on the front side of the coin. But equality didn't really show up until the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So, and not necessarily for everyone. So if this is a coin commemorating the struggle of gay, lesbian, and bisexual men and women, then that's one thing. If you're trying to include trans issues as well, and the coin is kind of missing the mark, or the spirit of the coin is missing the mark. But I mean, in terms of decriminalization, first of all, this image and the entire spirit behind it doesn't really have much to say about decriminalization. It has more to say about, you know, the long trail to equality, which did not really pick up until much, 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 much later. So I mean, it's kind of missing a whole bunch of things. The art style is also kind of under question, but I immediately recognize the style because a lot of the logos and images and literature and branding for women's shelters have a very similar art style, which kind of implies to me that this is an art style that was really big in the 70s, 80s, that it's a very dated style, which could be a thing that, you know, if this was meant to be reflecting some famous Canadian gay or lesbian artist from the 1960s or 69 or 70 when it was decriminalized, then, you know, that would be some really interesting piece of symbolism, except I think it's off by about 10 years mm-hmm. in order to fit into that. Like, there's a whole bunch of weird decisions that feel like they were thought out, but not well thought out. If that rings a bell to you.
Because
like whenever you do anything symbolic, you need to think it through, and it doesn't feel like somebody, I don't know. Like, did this design go in front of the Canadian... Oh, no, they got renamed. They're not the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Archives anymore. What are they called now? The
Archives.
The Archives, that's right.
Which is still pronounced Archives, but it's spelled with a Q.
I don't know.
I feel like they should have gone with Archives.
Archives. Because it reads like Archives to me, yeah.
Which I just want to do like a bad British impersonation of continental French, the Archives.
The Archives, yeah. So it's... I mean, if the coin design had gone in front of them to say, like, how well does this fit into your records or something like that, like, that would have been really cute, but...
Well, are you ready for me to spill the tea?
All right.
Not the actual tea.
Not the actual tea.
We have electronics here. So, this
We do was, drink tea when we record
we
this,
do drink tea.
We always have a cup of tea in front of
we're
us.
We're very classy ladies.
Sometimes it's an empty cup of tea, and I am not pleased, but
yeah.
We always have a cup of tea
we
when
we try
recording.
To find one with ginger in it on behalf of my lack of voice.
Your voice, yeah.
Yeah. Really, I'm in the wrong career when I have a lack of voice. I mean, this is not a good sound.
I told you to put honey in there.
This is true.
But tell me about the coin.
Yeah, it was... Oh, my days. It was a swing and a bit of a miss on this one. You know...
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, a lot of people have said, you know, first of all, they're like, you know, the government tried something nice. Or in this case, it was the Royal Mint.
Yeah.
The Royal Mint makes commemorative coins about every, like, tons of stuff.
Every little thing.
Like, they're commemorating all kinds of things happening.
Yeah.
And the Royal Mint is like, you know what? We want to get involved. They talk to the LGBT Secretariat. They talk to some people and like, let's do something to commemorate. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked before about early reporting that said that they only really consulted with Egal Canada, which used to be Equalities and Gays for Lesbians, and Equality for Gays and Lesbians Everywhere, I think.
Something like that.
Canada. Now their mission is more diverse. And the Gender and Sexuality Research Center, which it used to be Jazz Vision.
Yeah.
Now, these people, those organizations, they do not represent the entire LGBT community.
No.
And it was interesting because the article in The Advocate talking about this coin quoted Helen Kennedy as being like, some people are in favor of the coin. I'm like, well, of course Helen Kennedy is in favor of the coin. Helen Kennedy is the executive director of Egal Canada, one of only two people the Mint talk to. So it's like, of course they're going to love it. I'm like, really, guys? Google search. You know, and that's the first thing. It's like, well, clearly there are some people who are going to love the coin and they... they were.
I can understand they didn't want to throw it completely open and open it up to the entire world, because the moment you start designing by something by committee, you're just going to ruin it. So I mean, targeting a few specialists, I think, does make sense. But did they choose the right specialists?
They're talking about decriminalization here, and originally a lot of the conversation was, this is to commemorate, I think it was 1969 to 2019, so 50 years since the act that partially decriminalized homosexuality.
Yeah.
And I say that because...
Among consenting adults. And then what you define as consenting and what you define as adults got changed over time.
Yeah, so even at the time, it was the age for heterosexual sex was lower than the age for homosexual sex. Mm-hmm. And that was actually until, I think I was in high school when that changed.
Yeah, it was a much later thing.
Absolutely. So there wasn't even, so the idea that young people didn't have the capacity to consent to homosexuality, but they could happily consent to heterosexuality and children. Way less chances of children if you're in a homosexual relationship. But that's just one issue. So the idea is that this propagates a myth that in 1969, Canada, which is this super progressive country, flipped a switch and went from being homophobic and awful. Trudeau's dad said something about bedrooms, and now all of a sudden, the Canadian government is awesome and totes amazing and just great. And that, frankly, wasn't
true. No, so one of the issues is that I really do think that Trudeau switching on that is because Quebec, not only Quebec the province, but also Quebec culture, is still very much in the Napoleonic model. And one of the things that defined how the French Revolution changed France, and that this is going to come around, it is going to make sense, is that they really believed that
as a segue, you've gone way back.
No, victimless crimes should not be crimes, and unenforceable laws should not be laws. And this was, it came out of like blasphemy laws and things like that, that France had a lot of problems with laws that didn't make sense. So a lot of the countries under the Napoleonic structure were the first to decriminalize homosexuality. This is why South America decriminalized before a lot of European countries did. Even though, like, South America has its own reputation, we're going to get to that in a later article, at the national level, they're like, well, we don't know how to enforce these crimes, so we're just going to take them off the books, and you can do that on your own time. You know, that's a hobby for you.
Yeah.
We're not going to be a homophobic nation, not officially. If you want to do that, that's up to you, but we as the state are not going to do that anymore. And that's basically what it was, is that anything that is unenforceable was sort of taken off the books. But there's a lot of things that are enforceable.
But it wasn't,
so pornography was still very broad. Like, anything to do with homosexuality was declared lewd. Even if it was just, like, you know, a fun poem about two lesbians having a picnic in the park. The moment it's about lesbians, it's lewd, it's pornographic, it should be censored. So there's a lot of that going on. So a lot of the laws that were enforceable by stretching definitions were still around until like the 80s and 90s, depending on which law you're talking about. So the decriminalization was more about being a homosexual was no longer illegal, because what are they going to do about that? But, you know, owning bars, bathhouses, having events, things like that could be declared lewd or publicly indecent or pornographic, and they were shut down under laws that are enforceable if you stretch definitions. And that was the crossover of the like 20 or 30 years of the state figuring itself out.
So according to The Leveler, which is an Ottawa paper, Egal Canada also received $770,000 to commemorate this particular anniversary.
Okay.
So they were given lots of money,
but not the
they were consulted. And they're weirdly, just by coincidence, they're very much in favor of this coin. So I think it's worth, when we look at LGBT leadership who are in favor of the coin or against it, it's worth to consider, you know, really what's going on here. So that's something just to be aware of. Now, one of the things that's really interesting here is in 1969, you know, the cops weren't rapping at your front door, you know, excuse me, we heard some bedpost shaking. Are you a Mister and Mister there, Mister? You know, that didn't happen. Maybe you got people reporting to oust bad tenants or whatever.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the issue. They were denied rental equality, employment equality. Yeah. You could be kicked out of a job, kicked out of your home. You could be, you wouldn't have access to your partner's benefits or securities.
There's visitation rights.
You could lose your children if you were a lesbian. You know, equality had a long way to go from that.
Yeah. Inheritance laws as well. Like, it's basically everything.
And I think that's part of, you know, the Mint, in all fairness, I think had a bit of a learning moment. And if you go to the webpage for the Equality Coin, which is what the name of the coin is, it does actually talk about a bit of a... It does have a timeline function right on the front page.
Okay, that's
nice. So even before you get to the coin and about the coin, it sort of demonstrates that various things happen at various dates. Dust until the Canadian version was repealed, gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one other thing that's really important to note here is that no one Canadian political party has a monopoly on LGBT rights in Canada. The Canadian politicians do not have a monopoly on LGBT rights in Canada.
It was a long, gradual process.
About half of the rights that we see, even like the boring ones about equal access to pensions and stuff like that.
It's like the past 10 years, broadly.
That's jurisprudence. Yeah. That was the Supreme Court of Canada going like, this don't make no sense. You're discriminating on what ground?
Yeah.
Why? You know, and it's...
Well, there's
half the benefits came from the courts.
Or the court saying, how is this enforceable?
Yeah. And then the other half came through legislation.
Yeah.
And the first maybe major piece of legislation was 1969.
Yeah.
With the partial decriminalization.
And we shouldn't sell short the importance of getting the ball rolling. Like, that was a very big deal. It was very important. It started a precedent of caring. You know, maybe not even a lot, but even just a little bit of saying that we respect you as equal citizens, at least most of the time. That was a very big deal. It was a very symbolic act that got a lot of mileage over the next few decades. So, I mean, yeah, it was not, you're right, like to say, you know, somebody flipped a switch and all of a sudden the gays are equal, it's way more complicated than that. And it took a way longer time, but it was a very critical moment of acknowledging the humanity.
And I think if we cycle back to this coin,
and
it has two, it was funny because people were commenting about, we were like, I was like, I don't like the look of the coin. And someone's like, what do you mean? Of course it's gay. There's a queen on the back. It made me giggle. And I'm a royalist. I like the queen. But I was like, that's funny. But no, it's got the two faces. Apparently they're supposed to represent, you're not supposed to be able to tell what the gender is, and it's very much a down for your interpretation image.
Most coins have pictures that are so small it's hard to interpret what's going on.
So
that's not a good...
Not only that.
That's not a good.
But it has, you know, equality, egalite, 1969 on one side, 2019 on the other, and it does give the impression that it was a, like, there's no impression from that coin, there's no visual cues that there was a long, tough process.
There's also no visual cues on the coin that it has anything to do with the LGBTQ community. Or even, because again,
people think it's the Egyptian Tutankhamun. They think it's a stylized pharaoh.
Vaguely, yeah. You know,
and everyone's like, why do we have an Egyptian coin? It doesn't make any sense. And it's like, no, it's the style is very cartoon. The
I still think it looks like, you know, the logos and branding of like two-thirds of the women's shelters that I've seen.
Well, Joe Average, who did the piece...
Joe Average is the actual name of the artist, not some guy.
Like, it's not his cousin, Joe Schmo. But no, it's Joe Average has donated a lot of artwork. He's very prolific in Vancouver. He's very well known in Vancouver. His image was the poster image for the International AIDS Conference in 96, the same time his image was actually a stamp.
But so is Douglas Copeland. Like, Douglas Copeland is also a famous gay Canadian visual artist. Like, they could have gone with that guy.
But this is, his style is very much in line with the coin. Like, his coin is not a departure from his style.
From his usual style.
And when you Google Joe Average, the artist, you'll be like, oh, okay, I see where the coin is coming from.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking at the coin...
It's got kind of a stained glass feel to it.
Yeah. If you're just looking at the coin... I've got like a Picasso vibe, personally.
Keith Haring, if you know that name. You'd recognize Keith Haring's art if you saw it, but a lot of people don't know that Keith Haring's name is Keith Haring.
Okay.
He did the New York subway art with all the little like stick figures who are like dancing and stuff.
Oh, right, yes, yeah.
That guy, yeah. So it's, I mean, he's clearly from the same era.
Well, yeah, it's very sort of cartoon-ish inspired, sort of, there's like mosaic elements in
there. Yeah.
But, anyway,
it just doesn't shrink down very well.
He looks like Tutankhamun.
And the symbolism is lost when it's not in color.
Well, the symbolism is frankly not there. The color one is a little bit better because there's like the head thing has the rainbow flag in it, and then the other one is like blue and yellow. I don't know what's happening with that one.
The sun or something?
I don't get the blue and yellow personally.
I mean, when you see it in color and you look at the left side, it definitely looks like Tutankhamun, and you look at the right side, and yeah, the right side of the coin looks a little bit more drag queen-y. But beforehand,
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. That's the vibe I'm getting. It's like it commemorates Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
So before we started, Luke asked me, are you ready to talk about the gay money today? And he actually used the expression, the gay money. And I thought you were talking about, is there a study about the pink dollar that came out that I missed? And then I said, you mean the pink dollar? And then Luke was like, that would have actually made way more sense.
It would have made way more
sense. To just have a lavender coin.
Well, the pink dollar is the idea that gay people have more money to spend. The sort of a gay couple would have two men's incomes, because let's be honest, misogyny, two men's incomes with no children. So well, they have more loose change.
Double income, no children, regardless of your income bracket, you would be making more than somebody else in the same income bracket.
Yeah, or you would be children.
Spending less because you'd be distributing the cost of things.
Exactly.
But
so that's the myth of the pink dollar. And I'm like, you know, what if they made like a rose gold coin with like a little flag on it, and it would literally be
a pink dollar. Yeah.
And I'm like, I need to write a letter. Dear Mr. Mint, this should be
for it to be rose gold, actual rose gold. It would be one of those like commemorative dollars where it's made out of silver and gold, and you send away, you get your $60 in an envelope, and you send it to the mint, and they send you one coin that is worth $1 as a coin, but as a collectible is worth whatever people are willing to buy it for. Like they did that with silver dollars 10 years ago with Wayne Gretzky when he retired. They did a bunch of commemorative Wayne Gretzky silver dollar. I don't know why that's the one that popped in there, but I do remember they did Gretzky commemorative silver dollars.
You say that, but
the full color one is worth 50.
Yeah, the silver coin, which is a $10 coin, is going on sale for $50 at the mint. Okay. Or you can get $25 worth of the $1 coins and pay $54 for it. I mean, we're not that far off.
It's at this point in time that I would like to state yet again, we appreciate the good intentions. We really do appreciate the good intentions.
And I think that's exactly it. The feedback on this has really been right down the middle.
Yeah.
On the one hand, people are like, you know what? The Mint, they tried to do a nice thing.
Yes, they did.
They got a nice Vancouver artist to make a thing. Mm. It commemorates a thing. Mm-hmm. But the conversation maybe wasn't fully fleshed out.
Yeah, they went to the usual suspects, and it really kills me that one of the usual suspects that should be a usual suspect, who's never a usual suspect, is Patricia Gentile, who is a historian.
Who wrote the book, The War on Queers.
Yeah, she is a local historian who specializes in the history of LGBT history in Canada, and she would be someone you could speak to. You could have spoken to the Arquives in Toronto. You could have spoken to... There's all sorts of artist collectives that are based around LGBT issues. And if you're doing something visual, that would make sense. There's a lot of people they could have spoken to, but they spoke to activist bureaucrats.
Well, they spoke to EGAL Canada and CGRC, as far as we're aware.
Yeah, activist bureaucrats.
They may have spoken to others, and we just haven't seen any reporting on it.
Because not-for-profit bureaucratic agencies are famous for their creativity.
No, well, don't you be knocking all of them now. Anyways, we're going to go back to our lesbian tirade of great music, and this is Tegan and Sarah with The Con. Some classic Tegan and Sarah here, and we'll be back just after this.
Yes, I'm guilty of this, you should know this. I broke down and wrote you back before you had a chance to forget, forgotten. I am moving past this, giving notice. I have to go. Yes, I know the feeling, know you're leaving.
Queer. I am, should I say I'm the host or co-host? What am I? I don't know. I'm Sebastian.
You're the guy with the voice.
I'm the guy with the voice. Hello. Welcome back to Can Queer. You're listening to the soft, soothing sounds of Sebastian.
You know, you say that. A good friend of mine, Katie Sage, out in Victoria, the folks listening to us at CFUV FM in Victoria would know, or may be familiar with, Katie Sage's sultry tones.
Oh yes.
Hi. I can't do it because of my throat, but if you want to hear sultry, soft, soothing tones, In Rainbows by Katie Sage, great example.
I still miss Patti Smith. My taste.
Who's Patti Smith?
My taste in music is defined by Patti Smith. She was the midnight host of CBC Radio Montreal, and she would play all the stuff. She would only play stuff that daytime radio stations wouldn't play. That was her thing. That was her gig. So it was a lot of like punk and like experimental music, and that's where I first heard Kid Koala. Oh, I loved her. I loved Patti Smith. And then she retired, and Brave New Waves just wasn't as good anymore. Mm-hmm. Somewhere out there, there's someone who knows exactly what I'm talking about.
They know who Patti Smith is.
They know who Patti Smith is. Yeah, I think she used to be. I think she was sort of in the same school as Sookie and Lee, that she started in a punk band and that she got recruited into media because she was just really good with music. I don't know. Canada used to be really serious about its own artists. I'm very sad about
it. No, they are. They are. You're just not looking in the right place.
Not as much as we used to be, though. Because it used to be you could go up to any person on the street and say, name 10 currently active Canadian artists. And people can, you know, Alanis Morissette and Bare Naked Ladies. And unfortunately, you know, who are they called? Nickelback. I just had my brain just emptied out the space that occupies.
You forgot who Nickelback was.
I mean, that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
Nickelback is the Transformers of music in the sense that if it's on, you're like, oh, okay. But if someone's like, give me money so you can watch this, you go, no! Like, yeah. Yeah. And it's sort of generically entertaining in an inoffensive way. A lot of people claim to hate Nickelback way more than they actually do. It's just Nickelback is, it's like watching a Transformers movie. It's, you know, oh, I got nowhere to be. I guess I'll watch it.
You know, it's not a bad description. We're going to get some hate mail from both Transformers fans and Nickelback.
I didn't say they're terrible. I just said they're kind of, I don't know, whatever.
What, are you talking about the Transformers movie with the guy who has the paper bag on his head? I forget his name.
Oh, that's the first three, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, my criticism of the Transformer movies is and will always be too much human, not enough giant robots fighting.
That's a fact.
Even there's too much plot line, not enough. I just want to watch 2 hours of giant robots fighting. I don't think they understood their market when they made those movies. Just robots fighting. I don't care about some MacGuffin shiny purple thing that'll destroy the earth.
MacGuffin shiny purple thing.
Yeah. That's like...
You should write Yelp reviews.
Because it's either space lasers that will destroy everything, or...
That's a common one.
Yeah. Or
purple MacGuffin...
shiny purple thing that if you don't if and then they play like Hot Potato where like they have like this slow motion thing where they're like flying through the air and somebody has it and it slips out of their fingers and then a bad guy has it and they're in slow motion and it slips out of their fingers and then a good guy has it and it's all in slow motion. It just
That's like most Indiana Jones movies.
I'm just
Lara Croft.
I have movie fatigue. This is why I'm watching stuff from the 70s and 80s.
Anyway,
right now.
Back to gay stuff.
Right. I mean shiny purple things.
Shiny purple MacGuffins. So anyway, there was some great news in Regina in Saskatchewan recently with the opening of SASQTY, which stands for Queer and Trans Youth. It's been a bit of an initiative from the Pride in Regina group.
Okay.
And it's about, they've secured a one-year grant from the Canada Service Corps to engage community, build community leadership and employment for folks who are 14 to 30. So really focusing at building up LGBT youth in the area, skills development, community building, etc., etc. But this is a huge news, and it's great news from them. And we've seen actually some really great progress happening in Saskatchewan. We talked last week about some great funding happening there as well.
I find it very interesting. This is something that I'm sure some of our listeners might question, but it is worth noting. Defining youth as 15 to 30 might seem odd. It depends on what you're doing. If you're looking at employment and skills development, 15 to 30 is actually the perfect window. If you're talking about abuse recovery and escaping harmful environments, then 15 to 30 is also a really good space to look at that. If you're looking at like exploring your own identity, if you're not at least halfway there by the age of 23 or so, like you're doing something peculiar. So I mean, it depends on what the goal of a youth space is as to how they define what youth is. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but every single organization and law in Canada that has the word youth in it defines youth differently.
Yeah, there's no standard.
There's no standard, and I think that's fine, because it depends on what you're trying to accomplish, right? And you know, 15 to 30, if this is something for advocacy and things like that, that makes sense.
I'm actually quite excited, and I really like when programs like this get funded. In all of the provinces across Canada, but you know, we spent half the start of the show talking about Ontario, and we talk a lot about BC,
right?
And they tend to get a lot of the limelight. And yeah. I think that when programs like this come up, I think it's important that we celebrate that, but
yeah,
also
absolutely.
Talk about. I think this is such a great idea. Essentially, they're building civic engagement skills, so they're learning about nonprofit governance, which is boring but vital to know.
Yeah.
They're learning about volunteerism, about leadership, event planning, the actual practical skills, so that by the end of it, they have a network of people across the province who can actually enact change because they have the skill set to do it.
Are they teaching civics? Because a lot of Canadians don't know how their cities, their provinces, and the country works.
It's civic engagement through nonprofit governance and
But no civics, no getting involved in the system to change it.
Well,
from within.
I don't know if advocacy is in the bearing in mind this is a federally funded project, so
right.
There's like lines that have to be drawn around political engagement.
Well, I mean, you say that, but like all the different parties have civics courses involved. So, like, if you're a volunteer, because I know somebody who volunteered for the NDP, and I know somebody who currently volunteers for the Greens, and they have little workshops they have. The Greens less often because they have less funding. But if you engage with the parties, you can attend these sort of workshop-y things where they teach you, you know, what is actually involved in the Canadian system, because a lot of people learn governance through media, and they think that in Canada you can do the American constitutional amendment of pleading the fifth, which...
It's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
No.
So, I mean, there is huge issues where, like, people in Canada protest things where it's like that you're at the wrong level. Like, you're protesting at City Hall something that is a provincial law. You're in front of the wrong building there, guys. That this happens a lot. And this is not just a queer community thing. This is environmental issues. There's a lot of things where people are protesting in front of the wrong building.
You know, with Canada's multiple levels of jurisdiction, it's understandably complicated.
It's understandably complicated, absolutely. Like, I don't necessarily besmirch them, because, like, there's times where...
Besmirch.
Yes. I did use that
word.
Yes, thank you.
You get the word of the day.
Not purple, shiny MacGuffin?
I do like MacGuffin, but I think besmirch better fits the intellect of our audience. But
yeah, I don't judge them for being in front of the wrong building, because I know that it's complicated. And so,
I like how you switch from besmirch to a less...
Well, I don't want to repeat myself, you know.
Fair enough.
But it is complicated, and this is why I think having, like, if you really want to enact change, knowing who it is who's responsible for ultimately enacting that change would be very beneficial.
Well, what's really important about this grant and the support that's happening here is that there's also a space being created, ironically called SPACE.
Like outer space?
No, just SPACE. I'm sure it stands for something.
That is a space exploration logo.
I feel like they've ripped that right off of Star Trek.
It's like just, the horizon, like you're cresting the horizon as you're flying over.
Who are the graphic designers that these homos are talking to? Like, I swear, it's a bad day for graphic design. So anyway,
it's a wonderful logo, just not for them.
So anyway,
you know, it's beautiful.
SPACE is a community hub that's located in downtown Regina, Saskatchewan, where the SAS-QTY project, which I mentioned earlier, which is the funded project, has a bit of a home base. But also, it's providing a space. SPACE is providing a space for all of the other LGBT projects in the city to come together. Because often, some of the biggest barriers to actually engaging with community, developing plans, sitting down and writing a grant even, is having a desk to do it at, you know?
Well, the 519 in Toronto was one of the most beneficial things to the queer community in Toronto, and actually to a small degree to the province. As much as it pains a lot of people to admit that Toronto is the center of Ontario, it is, you know, the governing city of Ontario, so it kind of makes sense. But anyway... And the 519 is very similar. It was hosted by one place and ended up being co-owned by a whole bunch of other community organizations. So they do, like, you know, yoga classes there, and they also do outreach projects. And if you're a small group with no space, you can rent a room for very, very low prices. It's kind of a community center. I think it's co-funded by the city as well. Mm-hmm. So it's got, like, because community center prices are usually like $3 an hour to rent a room. Like, it's really, really low. You're paying for the bureaucracy generally. So, and as this space was built up, all the other organizations benefited from this. So you, because if you go to the 519 for, I don't know, some kind of a HIV awareness thing, as you walk in the lobby, you see the posters for all the other things going on in the community. And then if you get involved in one thing, chances are you're going to get involved in a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
Social and political and activist and personal health issues. Like, it's a good space.
It opens the door, absolutely. And I think the fact that Regina now has this is great news. It's going to be a great resource for the province, a great resource for the city. And I think it may sort of lend an example to other provinces on sort of how to successfully move forward and build capacity and innovation. However, we have run out of time.
Oh, have we?
Yes, we have.
So, okay. There's a few other stories that I didn't care to cover that we're not going to have time to cover.
I was going to talk about Pete Buttigieg, but you don't want to talk about him.
Well,
so
I just...
Maybe next week.
Maybe, yeah.
Anyway, we're playing out with Katie Lang's Constant Craving. I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thanks for listening.